Good morning, everyone. Today is Friday, April 25th, 2025. The time is now 9:09 a.m. I now call the meeting of the Finance Commission order pursuant to Chapter 551 of the Government Code. I've been contacted by several of our colleagues, Sharon McCormick, Rosie Morris, Troy Lambden, and Miguel Romano have all contacted me. They've indicated they will not be able to attend this meeting due to business or travel conflicts. They requested that their absences be excused. In accordance with the Finance Code 11.103, the commission members will take a vote to either accept or deny this request. All in favor of excusing these absences, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, say nay. Ayes have it, the motion carries. Absences are excused. Commissioner Cooper is not with us today. We wish him a speedy recovery. He's got COVID once again, and so Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez will present in his place. At this time, Commissioner Rodriguez, please do the roll call.
Thank you, sir. Philip Holt?
Present.
Bob Boardman?
Present.
Hector Cerna?
Present.
Kathleen Fields?
Present.
Marty Green?
Present.
Troy Lambden is out. Sharon McCormick is out. Rosie Morris is out. David Osborne?
Present.
Miguel Romano is out. And Laura Ward?
Present.
Chairman, you have seven members present and you have a quorum.
Thank you so much. We'll now move on to Finance Commission matters. If there's anyone wishing to address the commission this morning during the time of public comment, you will need to complete a witness affidavit form and bring it to the front. Public comments on non-agenda items are limited to 5 minutes and agenda items are to 10 minutes. Any comments relating to a rule may be made at the time of the rule discussion. In accordance with the Finance Commission's policy on testimony, public comments are not allowed on agenda items related to the final rule adoption except upon the majority vote of the commission, in which the comments are limited to 10 minutes. Do we have any audience members wishing to provide a general comment today? Seeing none. Before we take up the consent agenda items A1 in a single vote, I want to state that any commission members may request that an agenda item be removed from the consent agenda and be placed on the regular agenda so that it can be discussed and voted on individually. As a reminder, please state your name before making or seconding a motion. Do I hear a motion to adopt the consent agenda item A1 without discussion?
Laura Warren, so moved.
Thank you, ma'am. Is there a second?
Hector Cerna, second.
Thank you. Any discussion, members? Seeing none. All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? The ayes have it. The motion carries. Now we'll be moving on to item 4. I'd like to mention that the Finance Commission members Kathleen Fields, Troy Lambden, David Osborne, and Miguel Romano were all confirmed by the Senate on April 2nd, 2025. Congratulations to our new members. You make it proud by being that easily confirmed, so very good. Congratulations. We'll be moving on now to Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez about the operations.
Thank you, Chairman. A couple of items, a special note. Obviously, the legislative session is ongoing. As of today, there are only 47 days left of the session of the 140-day session. Special dates of interest, May 12th is the last day that House committees can report House bills and House joint resolutions, which will lead us into the next several weeks thereafter, ending the session on June 2nd. The next item is the cybersecurity training. This is the annual training. Just want to thank all the members for completing their training timely. As of today, everyone has completed their training. So thank you very much. And finally, just a friendly reminder to everyone, your personal financial statements are due April 30th. So get those in.
The ethics commission.
I'm sorry, the ethics commission. Yeah. Correct. Those are due April 30th. So get those in as soon as you can. That is all I have.
Thank you so much. We'll now move on to item number 5, Audit Committee Report. Chairman Fields.
Thank you. The Audit Committee would like to make a motion that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2025 second quarter investment officers report.
Coming upon the recommendation from the Audit Committee, no seconds needed. Any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. The motion carries.
The Audit Committee would like to make a motion that the Finance Commission approve the agency's 2025 second quarter financial statements.
Coming upon the recommendation from the Audit Committee, no second is needed. Members, do we have any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. The motion carries.
The Audit Committee would like to make a motion that the Finance Commission approve the Texas Department of Banking's Money Services Businesses Audit Report as prepared and presented by Garza Gonzalez and Associates.
Coming upon the recommendation from the Audit Committee, no second is needed. Do we have any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have, the motion carries.
The audit committee would like to make a motion that the finance commission approve the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioners Texas Financial Education Endowment Fund Investment Portfolio Administration Audit Report as prepared and presented by Garza Gonzalez and Associates.
Coming upon the recommendation from the audit committee, no second is needed. Any discussion, members? Hearing none, all in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it, motion carries.
A vote will not be required for item 5E, and that concludes my report.
Thank you. We'll now move on to item six. As finance commission chair, I'd like to instruct the finance commission executive director in conjunction with the commissioners of the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner, Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending, to evaluate and make a proposal regarding the construction of the new finance commission in Texas facility to be located, at 3500 Jackson Avenue, Austin, Texas. The facility planning committee will serve in advisory capacity to the executive director with no authority to make decisions, control, or supervise, and will report to the finance commission as needed. Do I hear a motion, to approve the planning regarding the finance commission of Texas new facility?
Laura Warren, so moved.
Thank you.
Jody Green, second.
Thank you. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it, the motion carries. Item number seven, Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez, please give us your report.
Sir, thank you very much. The Department of Banking's midterm accomplishment report can be found on page 15 of your packet, listing out all the priorities and the mid-year report for the commission. And I'm happy to answer any questions if you do have any.
Members, do we have any questions? If not, do I hear a motion to approve the finance commission agency's mid-year? Nope, we've still got two others. Slow down a little bit.
Tap the brakes.
Yeah.
On page 28 is the Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner report. Again, just the status of the particular activities, and as we work forward on these priorities throughout the year, I'm happy to answer and entertain any questions that you may have regarding the priorities that we set forth for this fiscal year. You'll get a final report in October.
Any questions, members?
No.
Okay, thank you. Moving on, Commissioner Retta.
Yes, beginning on page 36, you see the mid-year accomplishments reports. I think it's all explanatory in terms of the different regulatory activities, the thrift and mortgage operations areas as well. So don't have any other comment. Of course, we'll report on it again at the end of the year.
Thank you. I want to say appreciation to all the staff and agency members that are going over to the Capitol and testifying before committees. I know that's a tremendous amount of work, and it's tireless because you think you're supposed to testify and then you're postponed for the rest of the day. So I appreciate all the hard work and patience that you put up during this time, and it's not unnoticed. So thank you very much. Members, do I hear a motion to approve the Finance Commission Agency's fiscal year 2025 midterm accomplishment reports at this time?
Marty Green, so moved.
Thank you, Commissioner Green. Second.
Kathleen Fields, second.
Thank you both. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it, the motion carries. Moving on to item number eight, Commissioner Rogers.
Item number eight is the condition of the Texas State Banking System Report, which is a separate item that you should all have. The report is as of year end 24. It is a point in time, so the information there is reflective of that point in time. That is obviously a change since then, but it is still a good narrative of where we were.
Thank you. Members, you've all had this in your hands prior to the meeting. Any discussion or anything to bring up during our session today? Seeing that.
Thank you.
Moving on to items 9 through 13, commissioners and Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez, do you have anything to be added in the open session for items 9 through 13?
No, sir. No, sir.
Commissioner Redding, you're good?
I have none.
Okay. We'll now move on to Texas Department of Banking, Deputy Commissioner Rodriguez.
Ready, the Department of Banking's report begins on page 45 of your packet. A few items to point out on page 45, you'll take note that we are down 4 banks from the last time we reported. There's more detail on 3 of the banks. One of them did depart in January, so that is the net effect there. For the trust companies and foreign bank agencies, those numbers remain the same. No changes there. On page 46, would like to point out that we have had 1 of our problem banks improve, so now we're down to 17. That's the positive action there. On page 47, you'll note our enforcement actions. Of all the enforcement actions, you'll see an uptick in the information technology. So our information technology examiners are pretty busy. All the rest are holding steady. At the bottom of page 47, you'll find our compliance with examination priorities. As has been reported before, we're continuing to be a little past due. It's not severe at this time, nothing over 30 days, but we do anticipate that this may continue given the circumstances that we are seeing. On page 48, we have the divisional highlights. Several of these have been reported in the past and we continue to monitor. One of the newest items that we've added is that the department is monitoring the impact of the staff reductions at federal agency levels. Many of you have probably heard or visited with someone about the reductions in staff, the federal banking agencies. There have been reports of voluntary retirements and reductions in the force. Reportedly, the FDIC is looking to reduce their force by 15 to 20%. In some states, they have been impacted. For examination scheduling. The Department of Banking hasn't had that direct impact just yet, but it has caused some delays, report turnaround times, and interacting with them on trying to get some of the exams done. You've heard the commissioner say that the department handles at least 50% of the work that is done in the overall examination process, and that is evolving as we continue forward with some of the changes that are happening at the federal agencies. So more to come on that. Some members of Congress have had conversations and have asked the states if they can pick up a little bit of the slack, if you will. In a recent hearing at the House Financial Services Committee, it was brought up and asked if the states could do more at the exams for banks of certain size. $500 billion was thrown out and mentioned. There does appear to be some synergy behind that idea. Commissioner Cooper was in DC last week. He did get an opportunity to meet with some of the House committee staff members on this very subject itself. Unfortunately, he's not here to give us a little bit more detail, but I expect that he will do that in the near future for y'all. We do have a lot of our banks.
You mentioned to pick up the slack. Is that
do more exams?
Mm-hmm.
More exams. We are currently in an alternating exam cycle, but we would probably have to do more exams on our own.
Is there any merit to maybe 1 rated banks being done less frequently?
I think there's a lot of different topics up for discussion on how to handle that, and that may be one of them, but no official word yet. A lot of our banks have complained about the federal agency bureaucracy for quite some time, so I think Commissioner Cooper does believe that there's an opportunity for state banking departments to participate and handle a little bit more. But again, there'll be more details in the near future on that. With all the staff reductions and retirements happening and just general attrition at the federal agencies, the Department of Banking has a lot of postings up, and we are hopeful that we will start seeing some of those good personnel who are still interested in employment coming over and maybe working for us and helping us with any new mandates that could come down.
How would a more expansive role on the examination impact your budget?
We would need more people, more travel. So knowing that we're coming up on the budget season, that's something that we're going to be taking a hard look at to determine what we will need. So we probably will need more.
You did have some vacancies, right?
We do have some vacancies. We are continuing to work through those. If you have to do more exams, though, you will need more staff to cover that.
Absolutely.
But we are working hard. We've got a lot, and Ms. Pennington will have additional information on that, but we do have a lot of higher level positions open. We're seeing some interest from
those who are coming on from federal agencies. We're hopeful.
Very hopeful.
Any other questions? All right. On the bottom of page 48, you'll note some special operations and conferences. We do have staff that continue to participate in a variety of conferences and panels, reaching out to industry, so that's positive. On page 49 begins the corporate division activities report. A special note there, and as I mentioned earlier, we did have four banks that we've lost. Three of those are highlighted here, and one was highlighted in the previous Finance Commission report. So we're down by four. You know, natural progress on mergers and acquisitions, so nothing terribly out of the ordinary. Most of the time, our banks are the ones that end up coming up on top. So another item to point out is at the top of page 50 on the applications. Although we are down in the number of applications in this reporting period, we continue to see more activity from the MSB side. So those applications continue to come in. We don't foresee that diminish at any point in time in the near future. Corporate division is looking to hire another analyst to help out with that workload. On page 51 is the non-depository supervision activities report, and I'd like to ask Jesse Salcia, the director of this division, to give his report.
Hello, good morning. Jesse Salcia, Department of Banking. So on page 51 through 55, you'll find the division's reports. And starting on page 51, so basically there you'll notice that for the most part, normal activity. That's where detail of the money transmitters activity. One thing to note is that we keep on talking about applications, right? And we did issue three new MSB applications during this quarter, all that offer cryptocurrency products. So, you know, that is definitely an area that continues to grow. And but we issued three there. There were six that closed, some three of them actually for compliance reasons, and three of them just had a change of business plan where they didn't require a license anymore. Going over to page 52, here you'll have the other non-depositories industries, currency exchanges on the top, prepaid funeral contract sellers in the middle, and perpetual care cemeteries at the bottom of that page. Here, nothing out of the ordinary. I would consider that normal activity there. And we can go on to page 53. Here, here you have the ratings and we're, as far as three, four, five rated entities for these three industries, the MSB on top is combined currency exchangers and money transmitters. Again, same activity there, nothing major there that I would consider out of the ordinary there.
You've seen an increase, obviously, in the numbers that are ranked sort of on the problem category. Have you also seen some deterioration where people have started, or some of the entities have started off as threes and becomes four and five during the period?
Yes. Well, you'll notice that on, for example, on the top of page 53, right, in money transmitters, there has been historically kind of an increase, right? And a lot of that has been compliance issues, AML, for example, concerns. Also some financial issues. The perpetual care and the other ones, although the graphs may show, for example, the middle one shows a kind of a relatively high increase, it's really, if you look at the percentage, they're actually pretty low. It's just that, the way the graph and the scale of it, it makes it seem like it's more than typical. Perpetual care cemeteries, you'll see that kind of slight dip. So. I think it's normal activity. We are seeing some uptick in MSB mainly. That's where the area that's keeping us busy. Page 54, and if there's nothing else. Again, this provides a summary of where we're at as far as the division, the examinations that we performed, and our non-compliance. Our non-compliance in the middle of that page, you'll see that there's 16 there. We have just recently hired two MSB examiners, and they'll start next month. We're also going to post, issue postings for three more vacancies we have in the MSB side and one in the PSC PCC. So There'll be four new postings, and hopefully we'll be able to hire them. We go through the process, and we try to make sure that we hire people that we believe are going to be compatible and are going to be successful. So, you know, so hopefully we'll be able to fill these vacancies that will help us offset the number of past due examinations. So that's our goal. Hopefully June or July, we'll have some new staff, new examiners joining the division. And then I'll go to the last page, 55, kind of normal stuff there, but you'll notice that we do continue to, kind of going back to your question, Commissioner Green, we do work with other state regulators, other state agencies to try to address some of the bigger issues. So we continue to collaborate and communicate with them. Because some of these entities are pretty large companies, complex, so we definitely try to work with others. So any questions?
I could, MSB examiner, is that a skill set that's transferable? I mean, is that, do they come from that background, or do they come from a banking background?
That's a good question. We've hired recently, we had a Fed and also another one from industry. Sometimes it doesn't translate exactly to what we do. So what we found is if there's another examiner from another state agency, I think that makes a better fit from another another state, right? But typically we start them, we found that we start them from one and twos and then kind of build them out. If they have a foundation, maybe in a bank, maybe there were some sort of experience there, or an accounting firm, for example, that helps establish that base, right? And then we can build from there. So, but we are on the lookout as well for Wendy said about the federal agencies having some layoffs. So we're looking as well and seeing if there's something we can there. But it's not, it's a very specific type of examination process that we do.
Thank you.
Sure. All right. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Jesse. On page 56 is our human resources report, and I'd like to ask Ms. Pam Pennington to please come up and give her a report.
Good morning, everyone. On page 56 of your materials, you'll find the department's human resources divisional report. As of April 1st, the department had 12 open postings and 13 that we closed for candidate selection. Since the date of the report, the department has had the ability to promote four internal candidates via competitive selection, and we have extended four offers to external candidates, and those folks will start in May. Since the last report, the department has bid a happy farewell to two senior examiners who have transitioned into retirement, but with these departures, the department's left with 192 FTEs. With our entry-level financial examiner posters closed and candidate selection in full swing, we anticipate seeing an increase in our overall staff count going into the next quarter, inching the department a little closer to that 200 number for overall FTEs. As stated in my previous report, with the changes at the federal level, we are seeing more applications and interest in our senior-level examiner positions. The department has been conducting several interviews for potential candidates for our credit specialists, our IT security examiners, and our senior trust examiner postings. As of today, we've extended an offer to a senior trust examiner that as of this morning was officially accepted, just pending a start date. We are excited to see the renewed interest in our senior level positions and seeing progress towards fulfillment. Until then, the department will continue to explore all opportunities that are presented to us and hopefully continue to bridge the gap in our classification levels.
Any questions, members?
Chairman, one question, Pam. Do we still have a high percentage, like banks in general, of people that are in retirement, like 1 to 5 years? Do we still have a pretty high number percentage of employees?
Of examiners?
Yeah, examiners.
Yeah, most of them are kind of on the other end, though. They've got a lot more years of experience with their higher levels.
But I mean, in other words, close to retirement. Within 3 to 5 years of retiring, do we still have a group that, of senior people that are close to that? We do, don't we?
Yeah. Okay. It's not as bad as it used to be.
Okay. But it's changing over time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Slowly. They're aging a lot slower into the retirement.
Good. Okay.
Which is great, because we want to keep our experienced folks around as much as we can. So I will say, coming from a different other state agencies, the tenure of this organization is phenomenal.
And to even have that amount of tenured staff that are still here, could retire, but are still sticking around, it speaks volumes for the department.
Thank you.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Alrighty, on page 50, or I'm sorry, on page 60, you'll find our performance measure report. One item to note there on the key measure for foreign bank trust IT examinations performed, our variances target is above, just because there was more large joint bank examinations performed in this quarter. So that would be why that is a little bit above our target. On page 61 is the Strategic Support Division Activities Report. The first few pages of this report are dedicated to our consumer assistance area. A lot of the activity there is pretty normal, nothing out of the ordinary. On page 67, I'd like to kind of show a little bit of, highlight the commissioning process there. We are up to 4 individuals who got commissioned as of the end of March, one of which it was a credit specialist who has finally had determined that he wanted to go ahead and move on and try and help a little bit more in the exam process. So now he is commissioning and help out on the education side to run an exam. We anticipate maybe 2 more for this fiscal year. With the hiring classes that we've done in the last 2 years, the activity in this area is going to go up quite a bit, just because we have a lot more staff coming through here. We've had a lot of the people in the last 2-year classes started the process already, which is a lot sooner than normal, so that's a benefit to us as well. At the bottom of page 67, once again, a little bit of talk of the legislative session for the Department of Banking. We're tracking 562 bills. Of those bills, 1 has gotten signed by the governor's office. Everything else is in just various stages. 4 bills that the department is monitoring very closely that affect us have already been called out of committee, correct?
Yes, they've been set on the local calendar.
And they're now on the local calendar, so moving along, but ever so slowly. So that concludes the report for strategic support. If there's no questions, I'd like to ask Robert Nichols to give his legal report.
Thank you. Morning, Mr. Chairman, committee members.
Robert Nichols, the general counsel. We'll be looking at pages 70 through 72 of your packet. To begin with the litigation, as I reported last time, we have 2 cases in active litigation. Both remain pending at this time. I think I mentioned before that there's no merit to either one of these. They're interesting filings, but they're moving through the process. The second one that you'll see on the report, there is a hearing coming up at the end of this month. Hopefully we'll receive a positive ruling on that, and the case will be dismissed at that time. Moving on to enforcement orders under the bank and trust supervision side, we had 2 prohibition consent orders that we issued during this time period. The first was on Ms. Grisham. She's actually serving time in federal prison for that. That was a pretty large amount of fraud from her bank. She was an executive, and that was around $800,000. So she's ordered to pay restitution and a penalty on that. And on Ms. Dodd, that was a lot smaller. There was about $15,000, and she's paid restitution back on that already. Moving on to non-depository supervision, this is a multi-state consent order that you see for ABRA. This is for unauthorized money transmission related to stablecoin offerings. They were ordered to repay all customers, and there's a cease and desist involved in that order as well. And they do not have a pending license here, so I think they're out of business at this point. We had 35 requests for public information to the department and 10 inquiries through the ask a question feature. And then under the gift section, the commissioner, not in his capacity as commissioner, sits on the board of the Southwest Graduate School of Banking. And he attended a meeting that they paid his way, but that's because he was involved in the meeting. And again, that's not problematic because it's not through his role as a commissioner anyway. That's all I have. Pending any questions.
Members, do we have any questions for Mr. Nichols this morning? Seeing that.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, that concludes the Department of Banking's report.
Perfect, thank you. And just to piggyback on what Commissioner Osborne said, I think we've talked about this numerous times, but we really need to develop the bench strength of our three agencies, because it is a reality that our team members will retire, and we want to have somebody capable and ready to go when the time's available. Thank you, Commissioner Osborne, for bringing that up. Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First, I just make a couple comments on industry status. As we all know, there's quite a bit of economic uncertainty out there, and especially this is affecting our auto financing market. And so one particular item we saw in March of 2025 is new light vehicle sales recorded its highest monthly rate in nearly 4 years as consumers rushed to dealer lots to purchase vehicles before tariffs took effect. The March increase is 11% compared to the prior month. And so, you know, if the tariffs continue as announced, this may be the highest monthly rate for some time as we see the vehicle prices may increase. But anyway, we'll continue to monitor that pretty closely. Auto delinquency is now rising at its highest rate in decades, with about 6.6% of subprime auto debtors at least 60 days past due as of January. So I think as the debt level increases, and we certainly have seen some concerns about employment for a little bit, but we're beginning to see some effects on the auto delinquency. So again, we'll monitor that. Mr. Chairman, I heard your comment about bench strength, and I wanted to highlight something that our agency has done with bench strength, and I'm pleased to make the Finance Commission aware that Christine Graham was appointed as our new Director of Consumer Protection, Christine Wade, effective April 1st, following the retirement of Huffman Lewis. Christy began her tenure here as a Financial Examiner 1 in 2011. And has continued to add increasing levels of responsibility to her portfolio throughout her tenure here. She occupies a pivotal role in our agency, brings a wealth of experience and expertise and a deep commitment to our agency's mission. She's promoted quality improvements through our examination process. She's been encouraging and designing robust professional development programs, examiners and staff development, delivering impactful financial education, along with a lot of strategic approaches to changing, transforming business processes, and is working on the transition to NMLS SES for our exam and consumer assistance areas. So we're very pleased to have her in that new role. And second, I'm also pleased to announce that Carl Hubenthal has been named Deputy Director of Consumer Protection. Also, began his career here as a Financial Examiner 1 and has proceeded up through increasing levels of responsibility. So I'm confident in and excited for the leadership that Christy and Carl bring to the examination activities and the other activities of the agency, and that they're pleased with, you know their commitment to success, teamwork, and continuous improvement will certainly serve us well. So
Congratulations.
Okay, moving on to the report, starting with the Consumer Protection and Consumer Assistance Report. You'll see activity as of the end of the second quarter, and then we're running a little bit behind, but that's kind of by design, because we've strategically prioritized certain examinations, and we've got those particular categories at over 75% of our target. Property tax exams were over at 108% of their annual target. But we're anticipating that full-scale transfer to the state examination system later this year for those particular groups of licensees. And so I think we're still on track to achieve our targets in examination. It's just, you know, seasonally kind of adjusting it a little bit different. You see in the report on page 75 some updates on multi-state activity. We continue to be pretty involved in that activity. And then in terms of staffing, examiner training and development, you see some information related to that also on page 75. We are working hard on a new class of financial examiners to build that bench strength. We've got some good progress. We've got some good candidates, and we're looking forward to starting a new class in June. Year-over-year examinations, you can see the chart here. It's down about 15% year-over-year, but again, I've already discussed some of the reasons for what that's occurred. At the top of page 76, we are monitoring and trying to ensure that we keep our acceptable level of compliance above a benchmark of 85%. And you'll see everybody's there except for credit access businesses. It's been a fairly small area of activity so far this year. We've only done about 40 exams. We've got a lot more coming in the third quarter. So we expect that number to trend up above 85% in the third quarter. So all seems well on that front. And again, always appreciate the efforts of the industry trying to focus on that culture of compliance and keeping that level of compliance up. Moving on, there's normal activity on investigations and complaints. I did want to mention, skipping over to page 80, we do see a little bit of uptake in this ratio on debt management, debt settlement complaints. Again, this is there's a small base of registrants, you know, at under 95, under 100. And so that tends to lend big swings in the activity when you get a few extra complaints. But most of these complaints are debt settlement related. Not anything to be terribly concerned about, but we are just getting some more inquiries and questions and complaints about debt settlement. So, but we, again, we'll monitor the ratio of complaints to the level of the industry. Page 81 is our data reports from calendar year end 2024 on credit access businesses. We have the compiled transactional volume reports that are presented and some highlights here. We continue to see an increase in the amount of money loaned, a 28% increase, and a 46% increase in the amount of fees and charges over the last 5 years, trending up. The number of cab transactions are generally similar year over year, although there's some decline noted in payday, and there's a narrative comment there that we're beginning to see some activity moving outside the Chapter 393 regulatory structure that's likely not reported and not included in those numbers. Cab fees at the upper quadrant on the right expresses a daily rate of increased over the last 3 years. So those are just a few highlights in that overall macro view. On page 83 is additional information about repossessions, and we see a 10-year average repossession rate of about 4.3%. Q4 2024 did see a spike in the number of repossessions for multiple installment title loans, and we've continued to see a rise in multiple installment title loans over single installment loans over time. All right, moving on to licensing on page 84. The big note here is related to our transition to NMLS. We have begun transitioning property tax lenders to NMLS. Their transition period opened on March the 17th. We held a webinar for them on March the 31st. We only have about 3 weeks left for property tax lenders to get their transition applications in. As of today, we only have about 12% of companies' submissions. It's a little bit concerning. So my message to any property tax lenders that are listening out there, get your transition applications in sooner than later. But we're looking forward to getting the rest of those in very short order and processing through those. And I would like to take a moment to shine a spotlight on the dedication and effort demonstrated by the licensing department. Preparing for a migration project like this is no small feat. Just because we're transitioning to small activity, we know in a couple of months we've got a much larger group coming. So we started small, but we have invested the time and effort. There's been a lot of meticulous planning, teamwork, and commitment that the licensing department has displayed is commendable. And their hard work is laying the foundation for a very successful migration process. And I want to express my gratitude to Miranda and Ginger and the team for their efforts and collaboration. While there's much work ahead, we're looking forward to the efficiencies and uniformity of the new process. So stay tuned for future updates related to that. On page 85, this is our normal licensing dashboard. You'll see in Q2, we usually began to show some of the the conclusion of the renewal cycles. Many of the licensees went through the renewal cycles, so there's some declines in like credit access business and some general overall post-renewal declines. We kind of seasonally see that, although the credit access businesses was a little steeper decline than we expected, as we've seen that market continue to shrink a bit. Moving on to page 86 is financial education. And you heard from Trishayla earlier about TIFI activities, but she's also been active in financial education activities and is wrapping up Financial Literacy Month. So hopefully you've seen some financial literacy activities out in your communities as we've tried to highlight that activity for this month. And there was also I'll jump over to legislative issues a little bit, but there was a bill that passed the House this week related to financial literacy and requiring some financial literacy as part of the secondary curriculum. So I think that's a very positive move by the state of Texas to require some more of that financial literacy as part of secondary education. So it still has to go to the Senate, but the House did pass that bill.
Will it make it to the Senate, hopefully?
I would hope so, but we'll stay tuned, right? Yeah. On page 89, it starts some of our data reporting before we get to the performance measures. And I just want to point out, because it doesn't show up in some of the other reports, that the money's return to consumers is an outcome measure that we report to you on an annual basis, but it also gets picked up in this quarterly report. But I think it's an important measure of the activity that we're involved in. And that money's return to consumers, that first line shows that through our activities thus far, there's been roughly $3.8 million in restitution that's been provided back to consumers as a result of examinations or complaint activity. So I just want to highlight that. And on the performance measures on page 90, you'll see we talked about we're a little bit behind on examinations, and then we're a little bit behind on financial education, but I think we'll make up the ground on that as well.
One question I have just on the money's return to consumers, just looking at 23 versus 24, and fiscal 24 is about half what it was in 2023.
Yep.
What was the reason for that?
So typically we'll find in certain examinations, we might find a very large systemic problem. And so the refund project tends to be greater. It's a highly unpredictable number. You know, you really want the number to be small, right? And everybody's got high levels of compliance, but so it's just really highly unpredictable, but it's been pretty consistently, you know, in the 4 to 5 million or higher range for some time.
But that at that pace then for your first two quarters, you're at a pace similar to 2023, it looks like.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to end up at where we were in 2023. I'm not aware of, I mean, usually we're sort of confirming, because we confirm this restitution, and so we would be aware of major refunding projects that have already are underway, and I'm not aware that we're going to be on that pace at all. In fact, I'm not sure we're even going to hit the 2024 level, but because some of it was pretty early in the fiscal year. But stay tuned. Okay, any other questions on the material? If not, I think we're ready for Matt and the legal report. And I didn't highlight any other legislative items. Maybe we should mention those real quick if Matt has anything else. But obviously we've been pretty busy following, you know, several hundred bills just like the other agencies, and busy providing attending hearings and providing resource testimony and providing information to legislative offices. And so we're in the big sprint here towards the end of the session. And so there's a lot of things moving at the same time, trying to herd cats, so to speak. But we're trying to do our best to provide information that's requested of us. So, Matt, let me turn it over to you.
Good morning, Matt Ants, General Counsel, Office of Consumer Credit Commissioner. Our legal department report starts on page 91, and I really just wanted to quickly highlight a few items. One, on page 91, we do have one contested case matter pending before the State Office of Administrative Hearings, or SOA. It's a license application denial case. Pawn shop employee applicant failed to provide some required information. That hearing is currently set for June 18th. page 93 at the top, we have a paragraph about the CFPB payday lending rule and its litigation. That litigation has been going on for many years now, but that rule did go into effect on March 30th, even though there is still a pending appeal with the U.S. Supreme Court. This is a rule governing payday loans and certain other consumer loans that have a leverage payment mechanism where the lender can take payments from the consumer's account and limits the number of repeated withdrawal attempts from the consumer's account. Like I said, the CFPB, there is a pending appeal with the U.S. Supreme Court, so we're still monitoring it. The CFPB put out a statement that the rule did go into effect on March 30th, but that it's not prioritizing enforcement at this time.
What about the state? Is the state doing anything with respect to that?
We're kind of waiting to see the remaining pending litigation on that issue. And then further down on page 93, public information, we did have one referral of a public information request to the Attorney General's office. We're anticipating a ruling on that in early May, and hopefully we'll have some more information for you at the June meeting. And as for legislation, I didn't have too much to add other than at the June meeting, we will, at that point, we will know what legislation has been enacted by the legislature, and we'll be preparing a report for you on enacted legislation for the June meeting. Happy to answer any questions.
A comment? Will you take a comment?
Okay. The comment is that the upcoming NACA meeting is approaching, and you're still one of the official advisory members, aren't you?
That's
correct.
Yeah. Officer of that. The industry would certainly like to have access to that meeting at some point in the future. If y'all would reestablish that half a day where industry could partake and be a part of that, that would be great. So if you can carry that message back, not speaking as the chairman, but just as an industry participant, we'd love to have access to that meeting again.
Yeah,
thank you for that.
I'll pass it along.
Nothing else for Mr. Nance?
Nothing else.
All right, thank you.
That concludes
thank
our report, Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
You very much. Commissioner Retta.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The report from the Savings and Mortgage Lending Department begins on page 97, beginning with the Thrift Regulation Division activities. I would comment here, as you can see, that we do have, as of the end of the year, the calendar year, December 31st, 2024, we had 21 savings banks with assets totaling $319 billion. Of those, 71% of banks were rated. We had 4 informal and 2 formal supervisory actions in place. With respect to those 6 actions, we continue to meet and are actively involved with both management teams and the boards of directors with those banks. And I would say that they are addressing the issues that have been identified, and we continue to work constructively and hope to be able to report that there are some improvements in there in the coming months. I would say overall that things are trending stable. We don't anticipate any increases in the informal or formal supervisory actions to the report. The issues that still remain, of course, are things like interest rate sensitivity, IT sensitivity in terms of cyber risk and cyber hygiene of the institutions, third party risk that can be taken on, which would include IT or cyber risk with any kind of third party that you have an association with. In terms of the regulatory landscape, I would really just echo the same remarks with respect to the federal regulators. We perform joint examinations. So we are on site with teams from the FDIC or the Federal Reserve. So we kind of have real-time reactions to what they're doing. And I would agree that there are the implications of the staff reductions, the uncertain environment in which they seem to be feeling like they're operating in, all of those have an impact on being able to move as quickly as we would like to, but we continue to be I think we continue to be assertive in saying, let's move forward and get things done in what we're doing. But we're certainly understanding of some of the considerations that they're having to go through. With respect to regulatory landscape, the other thing that we have paid more attention to and beginning to is just the crypto-related legislation and activities. I think that will come up more. You've seen some legislation at the federal level about that. Just this morning, the Federal Reserve changed its statement on what they would look for dating back to 2022. As that becomes more, I would term it as normalized, in financial services. So it's too soon to say, but I think things will be, that'll be an area, a segment that we will continue to watch. In terms of going through the banks, we do for the industry have metrics that we report here, and the metrics that we track with respect to capital, to earnings, market risk, which is really interest sensitivity, and liquidity. And normally I go through and point out the specific numbers, but I know that you can see them when you look through here. In every case, we're tracking in the safe territory with a good cushion on with respect to minimums and capital, with respect to the earnings metrics, net interest margin, and non-performing assets to total assets. Asset quality has continued to be strong in the banks that we regulate. In terms of market risk, we do follow that. I think the banks over the last couple of years, the state savings banks, have learned a lot about that and have really moved to control. And we don't have any, as a group, don't have any kind of specific market risk that is a concern. And then in terms of the liquidity risk, we do track the loan deposit ratio and the net non-core funding dependence ratio. And both of those are well within the safe definition, the safe range in terms of how the industry is operating. In terms of the examination activity, we continue to stay, and we'll see it in output measures too. The joint examinations that I referenced earlier continue. I noted that there are some delays in responses and sometimes, but we'll continue to work on that. And we do expect that it's likely due to kind of that environment of uncertainty that the federal regulators right now are kind of getting their footing on how they will operate going forward. If there are no questions on the thrift side, then I'll move over to the mortgage regulation division activities, which is on page 100. There we present the licensing activity in terms of the entity licenses and the branch licenses. On the bottom of page 101, we talk about the licensing activity report and how we did process during the second quarter 2,663 applications, most of which were approved and moved forward. We had around 329 that were withdrawn by the applicant or that we denied. In terms of the applications process, if you look on the next page, page 102, we report there that we received more new applications, a little under 9% more than in the second quarter than the previous year. So year over year, it has gone up. And I think part of that is there's some, we believe that there's some optimism, particularly with respect to the residential mortgage loan originators. Having noted that, we do think there could be an outlook for more consolidation in the industry. March 31st, of course, is the announcement of Rocket Mortgage and its acquisition of Mr. Cooper. And that created quite a colossus. I don't think that's an overstatement, because that's they'll be servicing over 2.1 trillion in loan volume from that combined entity. And they'll have almost touching almost one out of every six mortgages in the United States. So it's significant in terms of what it means. And I think it could lead to more consolidation, or give an example for more consolidation that could happen. So we'll be watching that. If that happens, then I think a natural development from that would be that the residential mortgage loan originator applications could go down, because you would not have as much duplication if you have a combination of some of those. So we'll be looking at that and see if that's one of the areas that we'll see come into being. In terms of, we did conclude the renewal and reinstatement period, which took a lot of time of the staff, the licensing staff, that has been done. On the top of page 103, we comment on the mortgage examination activity report. During the second quarter, we did issue 99 examinations, covering 1,321 licenses. And while the number of examinations is up, the number of individual licensees examined is down, but that's simply a reflection of the size of the entities that are being examined. They have tended to be smaller, or they have tended to be newly licensed mortgage companies. So that number will swing around once we start getting involved with more of, as we say in the next paragraph, the multi-state mortgage examinations that take place. So we've completed one company, one examinations of the MMC or multi-state mortgage committee examinations, and there will be several more that are in process. There are three more this year that we know of that we will be cooperating and working with. In terms of the stratification of examination ratings, you can see that there has been some slight improvement over last year, with the 4-5 rated down to 9.4% versus what it was a year ago in terms of 12%. And in terms of the findings, it's the unlicensed independent loan processors that continue to be the bulk or the largest category of those violations, and then unlicensed residential mortgage loan originators as well. In terms of outreach and training, staff development is very important. And so when they're able to receive, in this case, Terry Washington did receive certified application specialist level 2. We do make a big deal out of it. We have several people who are involved in the industry and who do attend the NMLS annual conference, for example, and actually present the director of mortgage regulation, William Peirce, and a permit specialist by the name of Alexis Gonzalez. Both appeared on a panel and discussion there. So very much, I think, in the vanguard of leading mortgage regulatory operations in that world, in that specific segment. If I can move now to the operations division activities, which are on page 104, we did close out the second quarter. I reported earlier during the audit committee about the status of the audits that are conducted and what we'll see. We have, as of the end of the calendar first quarter, we have 66 regular full-time employees, one temporary worker. We have added, we are looking to add several more. We have several postings that are at the offer stages. And as we have said, we've gotten close to the boat before and lost them. So this time we're trying to bring them in. I will say that we have had begun to see applicants who come from the FDIC and the OCC as well. I think that some of that uncertainty in those environments and those organizations at the federal regulatory side, we have seen interest, and we've had applicants who have come in from those. We have, in terms of outreach and training, we have after the last Finance Commission meeting, we did hold a quarterly agency-wide meeting virtually on February 27th. And then May, in a couple of weeks from now, May 13th through 15th, we'll be holding an actual in-person agency-wide meeting. And it'll be the first occasion since 2019 that the entire department has been able to get together. So we really do feel that there will be a lot of synergy coming from that. I think I mentioned before, approximately a third of our employees have been hired in the last 3 years, many of whom haven't really met personally the rest of the team. So I think it's very important for people who have a common objective, a common mission, to be able to get together and get to know each other better and know who to turn to. On page 106, we have the output measures. My comment there is that we're tracking on pace to meet or exceed the targets that we have in place. And then on page 107, in terms of strategic projects and initiatives, I reported earlier on the mortgage grant fund, and that report is in the audit committee materials. We do have several projects in terms of record retention, in terms of an IT-related legacy modernization project that are in place. We report here on the summit, which is what we're calling the agency-wide meeting that will take place next month. And then we are making a lot of progress on this policy and procedure updates. This is a systematic work plan to standardize documentation of policies and procedures and even work instructions, quite a bit of detail. You'll see by the months there on the tables that there is some variability in terms of how much gets done and published in terms of policies and procedures. And that volatility or variability really reflects the volume and seasonality of work that's being done by the department and the different divisions within the department. But we're very satisfied with the way that is progressing now. We go to the next page, to page 108, in terms of complaints. Again, we look at, these are complaints here to date for the fiscal year, complaints received by type, the loan servicing and the mortgage bankers in terms of the respondent type that we received. And that continues what we see every meeting or every month, really, as we move through. On the next page, we have 61 open complaint files as of the end of February, and 98% of complaints are open 120 days or less. In terms of the closed complaints, you can see that we both have servicing and non-servicing complaints, and the percentages are there are where they should be at 100% and 99%. And then we now have the legal and enforcement activity report, and I would ask Ian Berry, general counsel for the department. But first, I want to see if there are any questions about anything that I covered.
Any questions, Mr. Berry?
Morning. Morning, Mr. Chairman and members. So we're continuing on page 109. You have your legal enforcement activity report, followed by a summary of recovery claims that are pending and closed. We do have one contested case at SOA for the first time in a little while anyway. This has to do with a residential mortgage loan originator. We are seeking to revoke the license based on fraudulent, misleading, or deceptive practices. That case is set for hearing next week, May the 6th. We feel pretty confident with our case. It's strong to quite strong, so I think we'll be successful. You have a summary of your Public Information Act requests after that, our future rules activity, gift reporting, and legislative activities we've already talked about here today. And so that was all I wanted to brief the members on, unless you all have questions or our rules coming up.
Any questions, members? Move into the rules.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So the first set of rules is on page 112. As perhaps the members are used to hearing me say when I'm up here talking about the rules, we are reorganizing the rules just a little bit. We do try to do load balancing, so we are during session. So this is a lighter load for these rules. So this has to do with our rule review of Chapter 51. And these rules are about processes and procedures about SML's administrative processes and procedures in Chapter 51. The reorganization bit is to take two portions of the rules having to do with the mortgage grant fund and having to do with recovery claims and offloading those into two new chapters. This would be Chapter 52 and Chapter 53. Big goals for this. One was the reorganization of the rules. And then as we've been doing, just to have more transparency in the rules. And so it really spells out in the rules what our processes and procedures are. In terms of procedural background, we did do a webinar that goes over the rules. It's posted on our website for folks to stream. And then also on the website are redline drafts of the rules. So you can really see the rules and the changes being highlighted there. Delving now into Chapter 51 here. In your text here, you have a summary of the rules. You also have the rules text. So happy to take any questions on those rules.
Members, do we have any questions today for Mr. Berry on this rule? Is there anyone in the audience wishing to address the Commission for Department of Savings and Mortgage Lending on rule item number 2? Don't have a crowd today, Mr. Berry. They're all over the Capitol.
All over the Capitol.
They are. They're busy. They're occupied.
Do I hear a motion to approve the proposal and publication for comment of amendments, new rules, and repeals in 7 TAC Part 4, Chapter 51, Department Administration, resulting from this rule review?
Commissioner Kathleen Field, so moved.
Marty Green, second.
Thank you both. Any discussion, members? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. Motion carries.
Continuing to agenda item 3 on the rules, and this begins on page 124. Again, I mentioned part of the goal here was to reorganize the rules, and so this is one of the offloaded chapters here. So the rules governing the mortgage grant fund, we felt deserved. They were worthy of having their own chapter, so we want to spin those off into a new chapter 52 concerning the mortgage grant fund. Again, the packet has a summary of the rules, what we're trying to accomplish, and it has the text of the rules. So happy to answer any questions about those particular rules.
Any questions? Is there anyone wishing to address the Commission for SML rule item number 3 today? No one has showed up again. Mr. Barron, you're lucky. Do I hear a motion to approve the proposal and publication for comment of new rule in 7 TAC Part 4, Chapter 52, of the Mortgage Grant Fund resulting from this rule review?
Laura Warren, so moved.
Thank you, ma'am. Second.
Kathleen Field, second.
Thank you. Members, any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it. Motion carries.
Mr. Chairman, moving on to agenda item 4 on the rules. This is the last one. So So again, this is another one of the chapters that we're offloading some of the rules, and this would have to be, this would have to do with recovery claims. So currently, those are dealt with in two subchapters in Chapter 51. And so this would put them in one single chapter and deal with all both types of those claims on one set of rules. And so again, your packet has an explanation of the rules, what we're trying to accomplish, and the text of the rules. So unless members have questions, we would urge publication of these rules.
Members, any questions? Is there anyone in the crowd today wishing to address the commission for SM rule number 4? Seeing none, do I hear a motion to approve the proposal and publication for comment of new rules in 7TAC Part 4, Chapter 53, recovery claims resulting from this rule review?
David Arch, one so moved.
Thank you, Commissioner. Second?
Marty Green, second.
Thank you, sir. Members, any discussion? All in favor of the motion, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Ayes have it, motion carries.
Mr. Chairman and members.
Thank you. Commissioner Redda, anything else for you today, sir?
One other thing to mention is that in terms of, we're about to enter the last month of the third fiscal quarter, then the fourth quarter. And so we're about to end of the season when we will begin preparation of our annual evaluations and of everyone within the department. And an important part of that is an assessment of where people are in for succession planning. We're very fortunate to have the Director of Operations, Director of Thrift Regulation, Director of Mortgage Regulation, who have many, many years. They still look young, but they have many, many years of experience. And we want to make certain that we do have a succession plan in place, and we spend the energy and the dollars necessary for the learning and development for that staff so that we can have, you can plan for succession. There are always disruptions to it, but we do hope we can plan for that succession.
Thank you. That's a good point.
And that would conclude the report in the department.
Members, do we have anything else for the general good cause today? I would like to make a note that the October meeting is apparently the same weekend of a Texas football game. And so Arch Manning and his crowds are taking over the rooms very quickly. So if you have not made your reservations for the October meeting, I suggest you find a hotel pretty quickly. I'd like to thank everyone for being here. We appreciate your service to the Finance Commission of Texas. No further business to discuss today. The meeting of the Finance Commission is now adjourned. Time is 10:16. Thank you.